Bunker, a well-hidden treasure. Pizza Chocadero. We serve delicious gourmet pizza with daily made dough, homemade sauce, and fresh toppings cut by hand. Ask us for our 2-1 special. Pizza Chocadero, open weekdays till 9, weekends until 10. Located at 7 Municipal, north of College in Edinburgh. Proud to be an independent family-owned business. Call 519-829-2444 or visit trocadero.ca.
CFRU 93.3 and Guelph's Feminist Resource Network celebrate the achievements of women. Born in Brazil as the child of football player Tonino Cerezo, Lia T rose to sensationalism when she became the face of Givenchy in late 2010. Love magazine also featured Lia T and Kate Moss on their spring-summer 2011 issue. Throughout her rise to stardom in the fashion industry, Lia T has been open about her transsexuality. With her open dialogue in various media, such as her appearance on Oprah's final season, she has striven to be an accessible face to other transsexuals and serves as an inspiration for the future of the fashion industry. This public service announcement is part of a series celebrating women's stories.
Boys in the girls' room, girls in the men's room, you free your mind in your androgyny.
This is Walter Garrison, the host of Locavore on CFRU 93.3 FM. Yes, welcome back to another edition of Locavore. We are having a really good time, I think, talking with all the different people that are involved with local food and local food production and the marketing of local food and research into local food in the Guelph area, in Ontario, and in Canada. And today we have a very unique show. We are going to be talking with two people involved in an organization called Backyard Bounty. And I'll be speaking today with Juliana Van Andrikem and Ryan Hayhurst from Backyard Bounty, which is a CSA-type operation that operates in the Guelph area. And it reminds me, when I looked on the website for Backyard Bounty, of the things that I used to do as a certified organic grower running a CSA north of Toronto and west of Toronto as well, too. And some of the aspects of production and producing local food and selling direct to my clients. So I'm looking very much forward to our conversation today. So I'd like to welcome Juliana and Ryan to the show.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Yeah, very good. Thanks.
Okay. I'd like to ask you, can you describe the origins of Backyard Bounty, how long it's been around and...
Sure, yeah. So Backyard Bounty was founded by Robert Orland. He lives in Guelph and has an environmental consulting firm. So he was inspired to do this project as he saw that lawns are kind of marginal areas within the city which could be used much more productively to provide a social and environmental good. So he joined with Scott Williams, who is a farmer who lives in town, and... together, they ran a pilot project where they tested out how it would be to take just 3 or 4 plots of lawn within the city of Guelph and grow some vegetables and see how that would go and if the community would be responsive. So it worked out really well. Several different homeowners were really interested in having their lawns used for this purpose. And they were very successful in selling the different vegetables to the restaurants within town. So, people really wanted this to continue into the next year. So that's how it started, and it was able to continue successfully.
So Ryan, could you tell us, how did you become involved with the project?
Sure. I moved to Guelph this past summer and I'm studying here at the university. I'm in the rural studies PhD program at the Environmental Design and Landscape Architecture School, and I wanted to be involved sort of on the ground as well as sort of in the academic field of this sort of reemergence of local food and urban agriculture in this case. So to me, it was kind of a natural fit and got me out of the office and sort of my hands in the dirt a little bit. So I'm really looking forward to the coming season, which should be great.
What does your research entail?
I guess if you could put it under a banner, it would be something along the lines of community food systems. So not at the exclusion of rural agriculture and the interface between rural and urban, but also looking at urban agriculture and things like permaculture and, you know, right into sort of hydroponics and, you know, aquaculture, I guess, if you will. But really just trying to look at all the dimensions of food, too, the social dimensions and the community dimensions. Obviously, the environmental ones are fairly well known. You know, I think not to be certainly underrepresented either are the economic dimensions of local food and supporting local businesses like Backyard Bounty. So.
Yeah, that sounds like it dovetails very well with what you're working on here. Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask you, because I ran a CSA, and we're going to have Mike Smith from Ignatius Farm talk about their CSA, what differentiates Backyard Bounty from other CSAs?
Well, we're an urban farming project, so that makes us quite different than most of the CSAs in Southern Ontario, really. And this provides a lot of different benefits that you get from growing vegetables within an urban context. So, growing vegetables means that you're increasing the biodiversity on the property, and you're also providing an increased cooling effect during the summer because grass doesn't provide those two benefits at all or very minimally. So, that beautifies the city, increases the pollination.
I could also speak to that to a certain extent. I think a lot of farms right now are looking at becoming more multifunctional. You know, it's not just a place where they produce food. It's a place for people. It's a place for education, for value-added processing. And I think Backyard Bounty has found a way of bringing some more benefits to the food system in addition to just producing food and doing it in a way that connects people really intimately because of the proximity and the opportunities to get involved and know their farmer and see where the food is coming from. So we're providing a lot more than just food here.
Now, I have to ask you a few logistical questions, and it's interesting that you bring this up because when I ran my CSA, I don't know if you've ever heard the name Bob Budd, but he used to run Huron Community Garden. He used to run one of the first CSAs in this province.
Wow.
And I remember talking with him, and he said, you know what, Walter, if I could just get 10 backyards on Dufferin Street in downtown Toronto, that would be what I would like to do because that would be growing food right where the population is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting that you talk about this. Now, there's a couple of perceptual issues that I'd like to bring up. First of all, you're growing in an urban environment. Now, do people have the perception, well, the food's coming from the city, it's not coming from the country? Is it perceived to be, how shall I put it, more prone to having, you know, contaminants or whatever because you're mm-hmm. you're closer to more dense vehicular traffic, for example? I just wonder if that mm-hmm. perception's out there at all, if you've ever come across that.
Yeah.
Well, it's something that we, you know, definitely consider. And so we know that some crops will absorb more toxins than others, so we don't grow those closer to the road. And for the most part, we're using backyards or areas that are further away from the road. And we won't use spaces within the city that we think may have some contamination because of either its historical use or because it's in an industrial area. So these are things that we have to take into consideration. But even in rural areas, you know, some areas were heavily fertilizer had a lot of chemicals sprayed on it in the past. So you have those risks, I think, in most areas. Mm-hmm. Ryan, do you have any other ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd be naive to think that there's pristine ground.
Yeah, absolutely.
anywhere yes. out there. But yeah, you have to be, make logical decisions. We get a lot of people, offering us their yards, and we can be selective in that respect.
Right.
So we're fortunate. And, most of the urban residential areas in Guelph were farms less than 100 years ago, or in their own right. So, you can tell when ground is not good, though. It has a particular smell and a particular look that would be certainly a flag. So we're conscious of that.
The other aspect is, okay, so you're growing in people's backyard. Have you had a problem with any sort of vandalism or people taking produce that they're not part of the shareholder group or whatever?
Not at all. At least not that we've really noticed. The neighborhoods are all really supportive and really like the idea and think, for the most part, that it's really beautiful and a great aspect to their community. We even had a garden, and still have a garden, that's at the French school up in the north east end. It's called École Elementaire. So we had some carrots there last year, and the students would just watch the carrots grow all season, and they may have taken just a couple throughout the growing season, and so that's not much at all. And that's even, great. I really don't mind. I think it's great for the kids to see the whole process and be able to taste the carrots and taste the difference. So,
well, you talk about the neighborhoods that are involved. Can you describe the demographic of the people that are shareholders in your CSA?
Of the shareholders? Yeah, a lot of families have purchased our CSA shares, as well as students and some couples and older couples who mostly live around downtown, because our CSA pickup that we had last year was at the Wellington Chiropractic Center over at 12 Waterloo, across from the farmers market. And so it was mostly people that lived in that area who could walk over to our CSA. And this year we will have a second CSA pickup, in addition to the Wellington Chiropractic Center, at the Borealis Grill in the South End. So now we'll see what that demographic is like, but I'm assuming that we'll have a lot of commuters who are coming in and out of Guelph at the end of the day, and perhaps some families and people that live in those neighborhoods.
Yeah, that seems like a natural fit. Sorry, I just wanted to say it seems like a natural fit, because when I ran my CSA, I dropped off, I think, at least for six families at a natural health food store in Unionville. So and the owner was one of the shareholders. So, anyways, Ryan, you were going to say something.
I just wanted to mention too that we also do farmers markets and restaurant sales. So that's a big portion of our business as well. And we're at the Guelph Farmers Market, and people can also pick up produce this year at the Wellington Chiropractic on Tuesdays from
4:30 to 7.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. And you said Borealis as well. And what's the
that won't be a market though.
Okay.
So I'm sorry if it seems confusing, but yeah, at the Wellington Chiropractic Center, where we'll have our one CSA pickup, that will also be a market.
Okay.
So people who, if we run out of shares, they'll be able to pick up more vegetables there, and we will also have a few other vendors. There will be some bread for sale, perhaps some canned goods, and a couple other things. We're still working that out. And then at Borealis Grill, we'll have our CSA pickup there, and we'll also have some bread for sale for the CSA members, but otherwise that one won't be a market. So if you are interested, I encourage you to get in touch quickly so that you can make sure to get a spot in our CSA in the South End.
Okay. And you said Borealis. So are you selling to Borealis as well too?
Yep. We sell vegetables to the Borealis. Last year we sold them 20 pounds of mixed greens each week, as well as other vegetables. So if you're going to be there between June and October next year, there's a good chance that you'll be eating some of our vegetables, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, could you tell me the most popular vegetables and the ones that you grow, in greater proportions, I suppose?
Yeah, the most popular, it's hard to say because everyone likes different things, right? But I think people really like the arugula and mixed greens. What else was really popular? The squashes. One of our homeowners, she had gotten one of our curry squashes and made a soup with that last summer and said, wow, like this was the most amazing curry or like any kind of squash I've ever had. I can't believe it. So she thought it was the recipe and went to the grocery store and got a regular, like a squash from there and made the squash soup and found, oh, like that there was no comparison. And so she was like, I guess I'll stop buying squash from the grocery store. So that was like, I was even kind of surprised. I'm like, wow, it was that different. That's amazing.
So I guess one of the things that I'm thinking about is when I ran my CSA, well, we had one production area. You've got several different backyards. Now, what are the logistical challenges of managing crop production in several backyards? And do you use a rototiller? How do you go to and fro from different backyards and coordinating harvesting, which is another, I think, must be a challenge for you.
Sure. Yeah. And as I'm sure you know, logistics in general is a big deal on a farm. You need to be a good manager and you need to be good at prioritizing tasks kind of thing with so many responsibilities from watering to weeding to thinning to harvesting, washing, delivering, et cetera. So I think because we have a couple years experience under our belt and have sort of run through the logistical routine, now we've been able to work out some of the kinks, but the basic idea is that you might be in the truck with your tiller. Yeah, we do have a walk behind tiller and your tools, you know, 1 or 2 days a week, and then the other days, hopefully, you can manage on a bicycle with a small trailer kind of thing because you're not doing any heavy tilling or any harvesting. So we're able to get some sort of cost benefits from that because we only have to be in the truck a couple days when we're doing the heavy stuff.
Okay. And speaking of that with the bicycle and the trailer, what about post-harvest cooling? Because you've got greens you're talking about, and it's the summertime and it's hot. So how do you handle that situation?
Yeah, we have a couple of depots in town where we have our washing and cooling facilities. So, you know, we've got it perfectly mapped out so that all the yards are within X distance from the depot. And so we do a quick harvest, back to the depot, wash, cool, and then head out for more. So,
okay, is that something that you rent out or how?
It's provided through a sort of a barter relationship with one of our close associates. So just some space in somebody's backyard.
This is excellent because, you know, the whole aspect of urban agriculture, trying to make it logistically sound and actually being able to execute. I mean, ideas are great, but the devil's in the details and the execution is everything. So the fact that you're able to do this and have this coordination and have this and have a couple of places that you can actually do your post-harvest handling, I think is really good. Now, when people come to pick up their vegetables, are they in a box or are they in a bag? How's that?
So at the pickup, there are several bins lined up, which all have different vegetables. And so I'll have on the chalkboards the allocated amount of each vegetable that you get for that week. So you go through that chalkboard or that list and you go to each bin and select the different vegetables, the amount that you're supposed to take for your size of a share.
Okay. I'm assuming you have an email list of all your shareholders. So do you email them in advance so that they know what they're getting so they kind of can plan their menu if that's possible?
Yeah. Last year I sent out a newsletter every second week. So, and I would say like what the vegetables were. But I think that people would like to have a little bit more information on what their vegetables will be and what they can do with those. So I will be sending that information out much more regularly and before the CSA so that everyone can have some recipes as well. We will be working on putting together a recipe book for all of the CSA members, which they can, I am pretty sure we'll just provide them this recipe book and then that'll have a whole bunch of different ideas of what they can do with the different combinations of our vegetables. And we'll likely have this recipe book for sale at the farmers market then too.
So I guess another aspect of this is you're farming in different yards and you've got different soil types and you've got different climates and you might have trees and so you might have a black walnut tree or something that might be exuding some, you know, something that could be, you know, not competitive for a plant that you're intentionally trying to grow. Have you had any, you know, crops that didn't do well and were your shareholders understanding with that, especially considering what you're trying to accomplish?
Well, we have a list of criteria that the new yards have to fill. So we're a lot more reticent to use a space that has a black walnut tree because the vegetables will be a lot less likely to do well. And then the spaces need to have access to water and be of a certain size, et cetera, so that it can be efficient and, that we can actually get some vegetables out of the space.
This year, I think, too, we're going to have a large emphasis on making sure we have more than enough planted, because the most important thing for us is that our shareholders are happy with what they get in their boxes. So we've made a conscious effort not to put all our eggs in one yard or one basket, and we think that we have enough land under cultivation to produce more than enough food for all our customers' needs.
So could you give me a ballpark figure how many yards you're actually utilizing right now?
We have about 30 yards, and that equals about 2.5 acres.
That's a lot.
Yes.
That's a lot, yeah.
In addition, we have another chunk of land, which is still within the city boundaries, but is actually a 5-acre parcel.
Right.
And we're going to be growing on about half of that ourselves and partnering with some other groups to grow on a couple on the remainder. So that's sort of a new model that's emerging for us, which is not so much a backyard model, but still an urban agriculture model.
Right.
Because there are lots of transitional lands within the city that, were farms 10, 15 years ago, and maybe 10, 15 years from now, they'll be residential communities, but in the interim, they're sort of lying fallow and really ripe for some urban agriculture activity. So that's what we're one of the things we're getting into here in the near future.
Yeah, that's a lot of what you say. It's in some of the urban wasteland in the United States, like Detroit, for example, they're trying to do this. So it's very pertinent and certainly very timely.
Mm-hmm.
As far as growth potential, where do you see yourselves growing? What areas do you see going into with Backyard Bounty?
Well, this year, we're really expanding a lot. So we've added this 2.5 to 5 acres that Ryan just mentioned in the South End. And we're doubling our CSA size. We're expecting to double the amount that we can sell to restaurants and at markets. So everything is really expanding. And given that we've had a lot of really great response in the past, we're hoping that these plans will be successful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We should also mention, too, that one of the new businesses that Backyard Bounty is getting into is consulting on kind of edible landscaping, because we're, well aware of the fact that a lot of people would like to grow their own. And while our main business is always going to be growing food for market and for our CSA customers, we now have a service. You can go onto the website and check out sort of the details where we'll come to your yard and come up with a plan for putting in a vegetable garden and or edible landscape. So I think it's a really neat dimension to what we do, and I would imagine it will be pretty popular.
Now, do you think you might get involved in processing, or is that too much of a stretch right now? It's a difficult thing.
It's on the radar because as our brand grows, we think we can, get into the value-added market a little bit, and people will likely, for the same reasons they want to support local produce, they would like to support a local tomato sauce or a local, pesto or a local chutney or something like that. And we do have access to a commercial kitchen this summer, so I would say that we're going to be sort of trialing a couple of these sort of things with some of our seconds, that maybe don't make it to market. So
I think it's a very important point because you can certainly, as you say, the value added, you can definitely increase your profitability.
Yeah.
And as you say, I was reading some statistic today that greater than 50% of what groceries receive as far as produce in the United States is often thrown out.
Wasted.
Wasted. So
absolutely.
It's unbelievable.
A huge amount of waste.
Yeah. So, and when we talk about, even here in, North America, levels of obesity and diabetes that are at levels that we haven't seen before, and yet we've got all this really valuable produce. It is valuable. I think it's more valuable than let's say minerals on the spot market or whatever. I think that we've got to look at every possible avenue.
Definitely. I mean, when you are harvesting your vegetables when they are at their ripest, and you harvest them right before they're eaten, they have so much more nutrients in them. And so in comparison to the vegetables that you purchase through the grocery stores, which are picked when they're rock hard and bright green, as tomatoes, for instance, thrown in a bag with ethylene glycol gas, and so they ripen artificially and don't have any of those nutrients that they've gotten from the sun or from the plant. And so, for instance, Robert's stepdaughter, they notice that she is much more happy and energetic when she's eating these fresh vegetables and other fresh and raw foods in comparison to when she is away for a couple of days and is eating a lot more processed foods that are just mostly full of carbs and protein. So, and then every time she comes back home, she takes about 2 days to get back to her normal, happy and energetic self. So it's really evident just there that this kind of food really makes a difference in people's health.
Now, another aspect of this is a lot of hard work.
Now, mm-hmm, it is.
you look at what's going on right now in agriculture, and we've got in conventional agriculture, if you want to put it that way, there is an aging population, and less people as a percentage of our general population are involved in agriculture than ever before. So how do you think we can encourage people to become involved? And you're a PhD student, Ryan, and yet you're getting your hands dirty, not just in research. Well, it is research in a way. Mm-hmm. I think it probably is. But also just in the day-to-day operations of a working, agricultural operation. How can we get more people involved, mm-hmm, and make that transition to agriculture actually occur?
I think, education is definitely one. I'm instructing a class, a third-year undergraduate class this year on alternative agricultures, and we're really trying to get students to think about the multiple dimensions of food and agriculture. It's not just something that rolls into the back of the supermarket. There's a lot more to it than that. So getting people to think about those multiple dimensions, I think, is one, and then getting them involved, whether it's a volunteer day or whether it's a small workshop or whether it's just making dinner with your friends and family and learning to appreciate the qualities of the food and just being very conscious of those when you're eating. I think inherently we all have a real spiritual connection to food. A lot of people have just sort of gotten away from it and lost touch with it. But the amount of people that that I speak to on a weekly basis that they're not boiling up to tears quite that to that extent, but they're expressing they're almost like they've lost a good friend. I had one guy who's been in commercial real estate come up to me, set up a meeting with me last week, and he said, I've been in commercial real estate for 25 years and I want to get back to farming because I grew up on a farm and I feel like I've lost a part of me, and I thought it really speaks to, how innate that connection is with food, I think people, it's there and we just have to figure out how to sort of help people reconnect to it.
Yeah, you hear a lot about, mm-hmm, a lot of people who are in their careers, whether they're in media or they're doctors or engineers, and they suddenly realize, no, I want to be growing food and working on the land, and they go back to farming. So that's really pretty inspiring. And Backyard Bounty has just joined CRAFT in Ontario, the Collaborative Regional Alliance for Farmer Training. And so we will have 4 interns at our farm, or in our processes this year. And so they'll all be in training for, learning how to farm and all the different practices that are involved specifically in urban farming. And hopefully that, can be a part of this new generation of sustainable farmers.
I'm just going to give out the website. It's www.backyardbounty.ca. Okay, all lowercase. All Backyard Bounty is all one word. And you can go on their website, and they've got quite an active website where you can, very colorful, and you can get all the information that I think is pertinent there. And
yep.
You're still taking customers for this year, is that correct?
Yes, we are. Do you want me to tell you or tell everyone a little bit about that?
Sure, yes. We've got about a minute, so go
ahead,
please. Okay,
so our CSA shares are still available, and the half share is for $295, and the full share is for $495.
About
and
how many weeks, sorry? Will
that's
that
20 weeks,
okay,
from mid-June to the end of October, and If you go to the website, you select Get Your Vegetables, and underneath you'll see the Backyard Bounty Box, CSA, select that, and halfway down you'll see that you can pay online or pay by check with instructions on that, and you can just fill out a quick registration form and get your share.
I'd like to thank both Juliana Van Andrikem and Ryan Hayhurst from Backyard Bounty for coming in to speak to us today about their operation and their work in urban agriculture.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Walter.
No problem. This is Walter Garrison, the host of Locavore on CFRU 93.3 FM.